Session, today's meeting of the House General Government Committee. And we have a couple of things to do today. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back, Kara. I would like to open a work session on House Bill 2118. Kara, you want to remind us what this was about?
I'd be delighted to, in spite of my awful voice today.
I'm sorry, I was not going to ask for you to talk much, and that's the first thing I did.
She's always looking for an excuse for me not to talk. 2118 is regarding the state of Oregon's library and the number of publications that agencies distribute to the library, as well as changing the process for a digital scan process so that library materials that are just on websites now will indeed be captured by the state library.
All right.
And Jim Shepke is here if you wish to ask questions.
I don't. Any questions? What's your pleasure, committee? Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that we take House Bill 2118 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2118 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Oh, discussion?
Just one point, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. I did check with the librarians at Southern Oregon University, LIT. They were assured that this would work very well for their system, and I enthusiastically support this.
Thank you, Representative Buckley. Okay. Any objection? So moved. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2118, except to say, Representative Esquivel, would you like to carry this for us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I shall.
Thank you very much. Next item, open a public hearing on House Bill 2092. Kara.
2092 exempts annuity issuing activities by charitable entities from the insurance code when they meet minimum financial and organizational requirements. I do apologize that you have to listen to me today. When the bill was first introduced, we thought that it would meet the needs of the very organizations that it was intended for, only to discover there was some concern about the various conditions. An informal work group formed, came up with some amendments for you to consider today, and we have members of that work group who are here to testify. I can speak to the amendments, or you may ask the proponents to do so.
Kara, frankly, the way you sound, I think I'll ask the our guest to speak to it. I don't know if you're all coming together. If you are, please come up together. Al Zimmerman, Wes Milligan, and Sharon Kloss Hogan. If you wouldn't mind coming up together and organize yourself, that would be just fine. And we appreciate you coming today.
Shall I begin?
By all means.
Let me begin by introducing the members of the panel. I'm Al Zimmerman, Vice President for Plan Giving for the Oregon Health and Science University Foundation in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
On my left is Sharon Kloss Hogan, Director of Plan Giving at Oregon State University in Corvallis. And on my right is Wes Milligan, who's Director of Plan Giving for the Nature Conservancy in the state of Oregon. Wes is also the Vice President for the Northwest Plan Giving Roundtable, which is the association of nonprofit and professionals involved in plan giving, estate, and charitable planning. So we've come today as representatives of nonprofit organizations, large and small, throughout the state of Oregon. And the importance of the issue that we're dealing with today in light of pressures on nonprofits and the interest of proper fiduciary relationships in working with donors and raising support for important causes. We're here to support House Bill 2092 because it will enable state government to operate more efficiently and provide charities the ability to fulfill their mission in an efficient and responsible manner. Philanthropic donors have a number of ways that they can support charitable causes. They can support it by writing a check, a gift of real estate, a gift of stock. But plan gifts are those gifts that enable a donor to support a charity and also make receive a benefit throughout their lifetime. Often this is in a sense of a stream of income. These gift plans include charitable remainder trusts, charitable gift annuities, pooled income funds, sometimes arrangements of such as life estates. These are especially helpful for older donors. And charitable gift annuities especially appeal to older seniors because the rates are based on their age and it enables them to get a stream of income that will help sustain them as well as to support the charities that are important to them. A gift annuity involves an irrevocable gift to a charity, and it's a contract by which the charity agrees for the balance of that person's life or one or two lives that that person will receive a stream of income. At the end of their life, at their death, the gift matures, and the remainder then is left for the charity to use for the designated program. The gift annuity is a contract, and the rates are such that it's presumed that approximately half the gift amount will be left at the remaining at maturity to support the charity. The older the donor, the higher the payout rate. Approximately 90% of charities follow the recommended rates of the American Council on Gift Annuities. So for the most part, charities don't compete on the basis of rate. They compete on the basis of mission, and donors benefit from this. Gift annuities are not new. The American Bible Society wrote the first gift annuity contract in 1843. So they've been around the United States a long time. Gift annuities are governed by the Internal Revenue Code. They're governed by federal regulation, but they also fall under state regulation and primarily through the insurance code. Various states approach the regulation of gift annuities in different ways. Currently, 12 states require the charity to obtain a certificate or a license in order to issue a charitable gift annuity. Oregon is one of those regulated states. 16 states provide for an exemption from insurance regulation for the issuance of gift annuities, but require the charity to notify the state. 17 states provide for an exemption from insurance regulation for the issuance of gift annuities, do not have a notice requirement, but do have statutory requirements to ensure that the charity is operating in a way that they should for financial stability. If House Bill 2092 were passed, Oregon would become one of that last group of states, and this would make Oregon one of the most efficient. So as proposed, House Bill 2092 would exempt charities offering charitable gift annuities from the insurance code, require charities issuing gift annuities to have a minimum of $300,000 in assets, require that they be in existence for 5 years prior to issuing charitable gift annuities, maintain sufficient assets in a segregated reserve fund as they are required to now, and that be part of their audited financial statement, which is kept on file for anyone to gain access to know that they are operating as they should, and require specific disclosure language in the annuity contract. The provision is included in the amendment would also allow charities to obtain single premium commercial annuities, and I'll speak to that at the conclusion of our group remarks, as permissible assets of the reserve fund. The charitable community, which includes large and small charities throughout Oregon, supports the passage of House Bill 2092. And Wes will speak as the representative of the Northwest Plan Giving Roundtable.
Good morning. Thank you to Chair Berger and the committee for allowing us to testify on behalf of this bill today. My name is Wes Milligan. I serve as the Vice President of the Northwest Plan Giving Roundtable. The Roundtable is Oregon's affiliate of the National Committee on Plan Giving, or NCPG. NCPG is a professional association for those whose work includes developing, marketing, and administering charitable plan gifts. Members include fundraisers for nonprofit institutions, as well as consultants and donor advisors working for a variety of for-profit settings. NCPG has a network of more than 130 local plan giving councils that provide local, community-based education and networking. The Northwest Plan Giving Roundtable is the NCPG Council for Oregon and Southwest Washington. The roundtable has 171 members, which includes staff members from both large and small charities, and estate and financial professionals whose practices include charitable giving. The mission of NCPG and the Northwest Plan Giving Roundtable is to increase the quality and quantity of charitable plan gifts by serving as the voice and professional resource for the gift planning community. To achieve this mission, we provide education and communication to our members and the general public. On behalf of our executive committee, we are pleased to have this opportunity to speak in favor of House Bill 2092. The bill makes it possible for both small and large charities to issue gift annuities, which offer a popular gift option that, when properly administered, benefit both the charity and the donor. The bill also maintains appropriate requirements for issuing charities to assure that the public is provided with credible gift opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Milligan.
Sharon, would you like to speak from Oregon State's perspective?
My name is Sharon Kloss Hogan, and I'm the Director of Plan Giving for the Oregon State University Foundation. I have worked in that capacity since 2001. Prior to that, I was with the Salvation Army Oregon Division, where I was Director of Plan Giving there for approximately 8 years. In both of these positions, I've raised money for these institutions and their missions with deferred gifts, which includes such things as charitable gift annuities, charitable remainder trusts, as well as bequests. Today, I have 3 points which I would like to emphasize in support of House Bill 2092. The first is that charitable gift annuities are an important tool, an important fundraising tool for the OSU Foundation. Many donors over 55 years of age wish to contribute to their favorite charities, but they also need to rely on a steady stream of income in their retirement. Gift annuities are seen as a win-win situation for both the donor and the charity because the seniors can receive an income and live on the interest that they get from the investment while at the same time fund their favorite charity. So that's the major point that donors really point out when they do a gift annuity to us, is that they feel that they're doing good for the organization as well as continuing to receive an income. They also are able to receive a charitable tax deduction and receive fixed income payments for their lifetime, and a portion of these payments are tax-free. If the gift annuity is funded with an appreciated assets, they also enjoy reduced capital gains. The second point is that the OSU Foundation has been registered to issue gift annuities in the state since 1972. We currently have approximately $11,800,000 in charitable gift annuities through the OSU Foundation. Gift annuities have historically provided about 25% of the life income agreements for the OSU Foundation. These charitable gift annuities help fund critical projects, research, programs, and scholarships at OSU, which would otherwise not be funded through other public and private dollars. My third point is that if House Bill 2092 is passed and gift annuities are substantially deregulated, many more charitable institutions will be able to issue gift annuities in the state of Oregon. The burden of administration will be reduced, and the time that is now spent on state regulation will be able to be directed towards the actual tasks and mission of the organization. More time will then be available to support important health, social, and educational programs to Oregon citizens. As Mr. Zimmerman has pointed out, the charitable community does realize the public needs safeguards to assure donors that their charitable gift annuity payments are guaranteed. The proposed legislation does have a minimum requirement of $300,000 in net assets for each nonprofit organization that would issue gift annuities. These assets would be verified by a mandatory yearly financial audit, and it would ensure that only financially secure and sound nonprofits would be able to issue gift annuities within the state. All nonprofit institutions which issue gift annuities would then be required to keep a copy of these audited financial statements in their principal offices for public examination. The OSU Foundation fully supports House Bill 2092. Thank you for this opportunity to express our support. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I'd like to direct you now to, of my written testimony, page 3, the issue that came up in the amendment. I've been the Vice President for Plan Giving for OHSU's Foundation since 1993, and I have the privilege and sense of having been involved with charities of various sizes. I've worked with Warner Pacific College, and the last time I appeared before this body, and could have been this very room, was in support of gift annuity legislation in 1993. And at that time, I was just coming at the conclusion of my time as the executive director of the North Lincoln Hospital Foundation in Lincoln City. As Sharon has related, gift annuities are a key part of what we do at OHSU, and we generally will raise $1 million to $2 million a year in gift annuity gifts. But on page 3, I direct you to the issue that came up in the amendment. When a charity receives a donation for a gift annuity, the usual methodology is to invest those funds in the gift annuity reserve pool and do what we commonly call self-insure our obligation. So we have a reserve fund that undergirds the annuity payments. The second option, though, for various reasons, across the country, a common practice has been to allow charities to what we commonly term reinsure our obligations, so that we would go to a commercial insurance company and say, we want to lay off this obligation by purchasing a commercial annuity to provide an income stream for this 82-year-old lady for the rest of her life, equal to, for example, $12,000 a year. And that purchase is made. Now, that does not resolve the charity of its liability. And that reinsured annuity, that commercial annuity stream, is part of the obligation then that's going out to meet the obligation of that charity. There are reasons for reinsuring, and I'm on top of page 4. One is the financial market risk. And if you know what happened in years 99, 2000, 2001, the markets kind of went south, and there are times when our board said, let's reinsure some of our larger obligations. The amount of exposure associated with a gift annuity could be a very large gift for a small charity. So the charity that's smaller might say, let's safeguard our interest by purchasing from a major insurance company a commercial annuity, so our donor has that added assurance. The smaller charity with perhaps a board that's not as astute would say, let's make sure that we're taken care of and our donor is taken care of and we're financially secure. There could be other factors in the exposure of the charity. It recently surfaced that the insurance division was uncertain how to account for the purchase of these gift annuities, and the current statute it was confusing. So when the proposed bill came forward, the intent was to put this practice into place so it's stated, allowed, and because it's a safeguard for the community, the public, the charity, the donor, and the insurance division. The proposed amendment recognizes the purchase of a single premium commercial annuity that is purchased by a charity to provide the annuity payments due to the annuitant. Such a purchase is deemed a valid and recognized option for charities that seek to utilize this option in order to manage the risk associated with a gift annuity program. Now, some of us that are active in the charitable community operate in several states. We also operate in the state of Washington. And the state of Washington recognized this practice and reduces the amount in the reserve pool by the amount that's been purchased from commercial companies. As we entered into discussions with the insurance division, it was viewed, let's not quite do it that way. Let's look at the purchase of a commercial annuity as an asset of the reserve pool. And that's quite acceptable, and there's merit for looking at it that way, because we're all looking at, are the reserve requirements met to undergird the gift annuity program? And they are in both cases. So under the proposed amendment to House Bill 2092, such a commercial annuity will be considered an asset of the reserve fund, will be counted as part of the required reserve amount, and we support this amendment and this approach. In conclusion, as representatives of Oregon Charities, we appreciate the manner in which the Oregon Insurance Division has met with us and accommodated the perspective of the charitable community. We feel these amendments, with these amendments, House Bill 2092 is good legislation. We support its passage. It will reduce unnecessary government regulation. It will reduce government spending. It will enable charities to raise dollars for important programs throughout the state. It will maintain statutory requirements that protect the state and the public. It contains reasonable requirements that are not a burden for responsible charities. And it strengthens a charitable program that especially meets the needs of Oregon seniors. We urge passage of House Bill 2092, and thank you for the opportunity to appear before you. And we're available for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman and the panel. We not only appreciate your testimony today, but all the work that you have done to make this responsive, this proposed legislation. Committee members, I would direct your attention to proposed amendments -2. That's the page we are all on, and particularly the reinsurance piece that Mr. Zimmerman was just discussing. Are there questions of this panel? And I would tell you that we have insurance division people in the room if there are questions of them.
Okay.
Mr. Buckley.
Thank you. Mr. Zimmerman, thank you so much for your testimony. Just one quick question. With the purchase of the commercial insurance, does that in any way take away from the amount of the income stream to the donor?
No.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Well, thank you. Thank you all very much for coming and for the work that you've done. We have before us, we are in work session on this bill, and we're
going to hear it yet, Lady Cole.
Okay, we're going to close the hearing on House Bill 2092 and open a work session on House Bill 2092. Representative Sumner.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2092 be amended with the -2 amendments.
Representative Sumner moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 2092. Any comment? Any objection? So moved. Representative Sumner.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2092 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Sumner moves House Bill 2092 to the floor with the -2 amendments and with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? Any objections? So moved. Representative Sumner, would you like to carry this bill for us?
It would be an honor.
Thank you, Representative Sumner. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2092. Thank you all very much for bringing us a good bill that meets a lot of needs. At this time, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2094. This is a bill that we have heard before. A quick reminder, Kara, of what it's about.
2094 allows state agencies to offer extended term licenses with terms of 2 to 5 years.
Thank you, Kara. Committee members, this is a bill that we heard quite a while ago, and it's sort of some folks have been working and trying to meet various needs on this particular bill, and I've asked Pat Allen to come in and talk to us about where we are and where we're going.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Patrick Allen, I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. I guess this is part of the There Are No Simple Bills show this morning. And since you all have multiplied since the last time I was here, I might give you just a little
bit of a review of what's in this bill and why.
First, the Office of Regulatory Streamlining was created by the governor in 2003 to help state agencies find ways to make business regulations simpler, faster, cheaper, easier to comply with, but maintaining protections for consumers, workers, public health, safety, the environment, and so forth. Part of our effort has been to look at the kinds of licensing the state does and ask some fundamental questions about why do we do things the way we do, and are there ways we could achieve the same results that have less impact on business. One of the tasks that we undertook was to create a statewide directory of licenses and permits. So we've now got one online spot where you can go to find out basic information about all 1,100 or so different kinds of licenses the state issues. One of the things we were able to learn from that exercise was that we've got a lot of licenses, 300 to 400 of them, that are one-year licenses. And I think the example I used when this bill first came up was to say, you know, some of them are like amusement park rides where, thank heavens, it's a one-year license and someone goes out and looks at it once a year to make sure the ride isn't going to kill anybody. But there are a lot of them where you kind of ask the question, why is this a one-year license? And a lot of times the only answer you get to is, well, because statute says it's a one-year license. And rather than maybe think about trying to bring you 300 different bills to deal with each of those licenses one by one and come up with some different term, House Bill 2094 was a broad brush attempt to give agencies the authority, if it was consistent with the underlying reason the license exists, to offer extended terms up to 5 years. When you first heard this bill, you asked for amendments that would refine that in a couple of ways. First, that action of extending of creating an extended license term would occur as a result of an administrative process, so there was some kind of public hearing, opportunity for comment, and those kinds of things. And secondly, that the agency had to explicitly find that extending a license term was consistent with the public policy purpose for the licensing. And I believe you previously saw a set of -1 amendments that did that. At that hearing, where the -1 amendments were discussed, an issue came up that we weren't aware of in the drafting of this, or concerns came up having to do with the applicability of extended licenses to liquor licenses issued by OLCC and the role of local government in being able to comment on those licenses. And really, that's what we've been trying to do in the intervening 3 weeks or so, is come up with language that deals by policy generally with issues that meet the needs of local government to be able to provide meaningful comment on licenses. And still provide the opportunity for liquor licenses to be one of the kinds of licenses that can, under the right kinds of circumstances, benefit from extended licenses. And what I'm basically here to tell you is we're probably 98% of the way to having identified that language. We will, by the end of the day today, be able to provide staff with a document that is ready to go to Legislative Council. Seeing what Legislative Council does with that language, I think, is what will get us to 100% agreement from the stakeholders. Just briefly, I think the direction that we're going, the bill as constructed lets an agency say generally this license, whatever it is, can be a longer term license than what statute provides. We're now heading toward a direction that looks more like an agency being able to say, here's a class of licensees who operate in a certain way, and those licensees, by virtue of their clean record, or however you want to phrase it, are entitled to a longer term licensee than initial licenses or licensees who've had some kind of a pattern of difficulty with their license. We've also caught a couple of other issues in terms of clarifying how fees get multiplied. If you have a one-year license that goes to a five-year license, how do you change the fee to reflect that? We also discovered at least a couple of areas where in statute the number of hours of continuing education a licensee is required to get per license also needs to have a multiplier, so we don't have a problem there. That's really the kind of the long and short of where we are on this. As I say, I should be able to have language to staff by the end of the day today, and hopefully we'll be able to bring this back up to you shortly with some consensus. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. I think you can tell members of the committee that a lot of folks have been working in the background on this one, and we're very close. We'll get some statutory language for the amendments. In the meantime, are there questions or other issues that the committee, now is the time to sort of come forward with whatever their other issues around this bill, because you will see it back, and you can also ask me or we can get answers if you have anything, because we really appreciate all the work that you and a lot of other folks have done to try and get us here.
I should say I believe OLCC and the League of Cities are in the room also if there are questions specifically for them.
Okay. Seeing none, we are... Thank you.
Thank you.
Patrick, we're going to close public hearing on House Bill 2094. Mm-hmm. And I need to open it, or can I just talk about it? Okay. Members of the committee, my administrator says I don't need to open a public hearing on 2115. This is another bill. There are discussions going on to make it better. This is what we do, and I can assure you that it will be back. But in the meantime, it will be better when it comes back. So I appreciate your indulgence. And if you have any questions or suggestions on these things, please contact my office. Okay? That being the conclusion, I am going to close or adjourn this committee on general government for the day. And thank you very much. And stay healthy, everybody. Sal, go rest.